Welcome to the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined as always by Paul Hoynes on the road in Kansas City. Paul, good to talk to you again.
Same here, Joe. Same here, definitely.
Well, last road trip of the season, and some of these postseason questions are starting to come into focus as we see it. We heard from Terry Francona within the last couple of days. We're getting a clearer picture of what the starting pitching rotation could look like. Tito said Kluber and Carrasco the first two games.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like, Joe. Kluber Carrasco games 1 and 2 at Minute Maid Park against the Astros. Then it's kind of a jump ball after that. I think, you know, he indicated a couple days ago, he didn't really come out and say it, but, that Clevinger would start game 3 and then probably Bauer for game 4. But, I think the way they're looking at things right now, you know, they'll have Bauer and Clevinger available out of the bullpen for those first two games. And if either one of them pitches, the guy that doesn't pitch or doesn't pitch, you know, is pitched the least, could end up starting that game 3, and then the other guy would start 4. So I think that's the way they're looking at it. And we don't even know if they would need a game 4, you know, one way or the other. And then if it goes to game 5, then you bring Kluber back.
What's the logic in not just straight up naming one and then the other, the starters in games 3 or 4? Is it is Tito just trying, in his words, trying to maximize the number of players on the roster there?
Yeah, I think that's it. And I think they probably do have a, you know, pretty firm idea who they want to pitch in game 3 and 4. And I think they're just, you know, more than anything, I think he wants to wait until he gets through these last 3 games against Kansas City, make sure everybody is healthy, and then name his rotation. And I think, you know, I don't know how much strategy goes into it, as far as, you know, kind of playing the cat and mouse game with the Astros, you know, so they can't set up their offense, you know, a week in advance. So maybe that has something to do with it. But I'm pretty sure, you know, they've got their guys picked.
Right. And among the pitchers, the 4 in the rotation there that we've talked about, at least in this regular season, Kluber and Bauer were the ones that had the most success against the Astros. Carrasco only faced him the one time, but got had a real nice pitcher's duel on a Sunday night with Lance McCullers. Clevinger was the one that sort of took lumps in one of his outings. Are they trying to protect him there with this shuffle, or is this just trying to put your best guy out there the most number of times?
Yeah, I think I think, like you said, I think they're trying to put their best guy out there a number of as many times as possible. I think they like the way Clevinger's been pitching lately, and if I remember that game against Houston, Clevinger was going along pretty good, and he ran into that one inning. Mm-hmm. I think it was a sixth or seventh inning. He walked a couple guys, and I think Tito may have gone a little long with him, probably a little longer than normal, and he got into some trouble there. So I think no matter how you look at it, I think they're in pretty good shape, you know, starting pitching wise. I wonder about Bauer, just how long is he going to be able to go? That's the question to me. And I think that's the guy they would, if you were going to go with the reliever, let's say Kluber or Carrasco gets in trouble, early, that's the guy I'd go with. And then, kind of get 2 or 3 innings out of him, and then, go to the bullpen.
Well, and we've seen it over this last week with Bauer's sort of rehab outings here, major league rehab outings. The last couple of times he's opened the game, or he's pitched an inning or two, and you've had Bieber and then Carrasco come in relief. So they've been experimenting with that and all that. But the thing that really stands out to me with this news from Tito from last week is that you're finally going to give your number one guy, your ace, the ball in game 1 of a series for the first time, in at least the first game of the ALDS for the first time in 3 years. This will be his first time starting game one of the ALDS.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know how, you know, if there were – obviously there was something going on last year. Mm-hmm. I think they knew he wasn't 100%. You know, they've never said that, but I don't see any other reason why you start Bauer in that game. And unless, you know, they were so dead set on bringing Bauer back on short rest, but it's still – well, I'm not going to get into that because it still drives me crazy that they did that. But I think, yeah, you know, Kluber is set. You know, he's going for his 21st win, not tonight, but Saturday night. And, you know, he'll be in good shape there. He'll have the extra day. You know, I think, you know, he'll pitch Saturday. Then he'll pitch October 5th, which I believe is Friday in game one. So he'll be well rested. He should be you know, I don't think he's in a real good place to start this game.
All right. Well, the real good place that you will be on Thursday, Friday, Saturday next week is Minute Maid Park in Houston to open the ALDS. The matchup against the defending champion Astros, as it stands right now, you know, where should the Indians be the most concerned when it comes to facing that Astros lineup?
You know, I think, you know, it's kind of a pick your poison lineup. You know, they're loaded. They have a lot of guys that have just, you know, that are just still coming round and back into shape after being, you know, pretty long stints on the DL. You know, Altuve and Correa. Correa hasn't played for a little bit because of his back. He's being rested. But this is a real good lineup, and you know, the thing that impresses me about Houston is they don't stop. You know, they're kind of like Boston in that regard. That, you know, they're never out of a game, and they keep coming at you. They'll score late. They can hit home runs. They can run the bases. They can steal bases, and you know, you team that up with, you know, you know, the best starting rotation in the American League and the best bullpen in the American League. And that's a tough ticket to punch right there.
For me, at least, just looking at the one area is Alex Bregman. He's had a lot of success against the Indians in the last couple of seasons, particularly this year. And he's hot right now. He's been among one of the American League's best players in the last month or so. And in a lot of what I'm reading and seeing online, guys are talking about him ahead of even Jose Ramirez in the MVP voting. And you know, Jose's, you know, well documented. He struggled the last, you know, month or maybe even a little bit longer than that. And to see the consistency and the production out of Bregman at the top of that Astros lineup is kind of scary.
Yeah, you know, it is. I mean, you know, with Ramirez, you're talking about a guy that you look at his numbers and they kind of blow you away. But like you said, you know, the last month and a half since August 15th, about, you know, he's really been struggling. And Bregman, you know, a good way to look at it, I think, is, you know, Jose was the starting third baseman at the All-Star game, but Bregman was the MVP of the All-Star game. So I think, you know, that's, you know, so it's a great matchup, you know, individual matchup. Of course, Jose's at second base now. But you know, it's going to be fun matchup to watch. And Bregman, like you said, is having a great September. You know, I think I'm not sure if he's still leading the American League in extra base hits, but if not, he's really close. I mean, and, you know, you saw him last year in the postseason, you know, defensively and offensively. Just, you know, he was one of the main reasons the Astros won the World Series. So, you know, definitely a great player. And that lineup is dotted with him. They've got it up and down the lineup.
Where in the Indians lineup do you see an advantage, or do you see an advantage for Cleveland at any of the spots in the Indians lineup?
You know, you've got to like Lindor. You know, you got to like Lindor in the leadoff spot. You know, I think he, you know, this is a guy, what, 36, 37 home runs, leading, you know, over 100 runs scored. over 20 stolen bases, close to, you know, over 90 runs driven in, extra base power. He can run. So that's a big plus. I think that top, you know, Lindor, Brantley, Ramirez, Encarnacion, you know, Donaldson, we've seen a little, you know, some, you know, he had like three hits last night. So that, but I like the top of their lineup. I really do. You know, probably the bottom of Houston's lineup is a little more dangerous, but you know, at least now you've got you know, you've got Cabrera down there, you've got Kipnis down there. They're starting to swing the bats a little bit, so that gives you, you know, that at least you can counteract that. But Houston, you know, Tony Kemp, those guys down at the bottom of the order, that's a dangerous lineup.
All right. Well, you bring up Lindor. I believe he's batting something like 093 this season against Houston. They've really found a way to sort of hold him in check the way they've pitched him this year. And you mentioned Donaldson. Donaldson has not played against Houston this year, but in his career, his numbers, particularly at Minute Maid Park, are sort of off the charts. I think he's, you know, his OPS at Minute Maid Park is something like 900 something. So again, those are, you know, Lindor, they're going to need him to show up in the playoffs this year.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big question, Joe. Lindor and Ramirez, you know, we remember what happened to him against the Yankees in the ALDS last year. What were they, two for 40 or something like that? It was combined, they did not do well. And so this is, you know, those two guys make this offense go, and, you know, it's time to show up right now.
All right. Last night there was the what could have been Josh Tomlin's last appearance with the Indians. Started the game, went 4 2/3, gave up a home run. It was a typical Josh Tomlin, sort of a typical 2018 Josh Tomlin outing. But you know, this could be the last appearance for the little cowboy, and you know, longest tenured guy on with the organization. You know, if this is his sort of swan song, what are you going to remember about Josh Tomlin?
I just remember how always positive he was, and how good he was with the media. You could ask him anything. You know, people were asking him last night, you know, have you thought about this being your last start? And just, you know, he's a refreshing guy. He's a guy to me that, you know, I don't think anything was ever given to this guy. He was a low draft pick. You know, if you look at his career, he made the stop. He didn't skip too many stops or levels, I should say. You know, A ball, double A. I mean, all the way up, he had to stop and prove himself every year. And he did. He got the most out of his talent. And I think he, I was, you know, when Cody Allen was talking about the rotation several days ago, you know, I was surprised that he named Kluber, you know, as leader, kind of, and you expected that. But he also named Tomlin. He said those two guys set the example for the rest of the pitchers on the staff, especially the rotation. And I'm thinking, you know, Tomlin isn't, you know, this is a guy that has made what, 8 or 9 starts this year. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, really been on. He was on the DL for over a month. He was kind of out of sight, out of mind, at least, you know, from the outside looking in, but obviously he wasn't. And obviously he carries a lot of weight in the clubhouse. I think he will be missed if this is his last year, if this was his last appearance. I think, you know, those are the kind of guys that you win with. You know, you don't necessarily see it all the time on the field, but you know, I think every championship team has a guy like Josh Tomlin, be he a position player or a pitcher. Those are the kind of the glue guys, you know, not the guys that are the super talented guys, but those are the guys that kind of that can motivate those guys with more talent. You know, they you know, I remember Andrew Miller during the this was 2016 when he came over from the Yankees, and he said, I love to watch this guy pitch. This guy is throwing 86 miles an hour, 86 to 88 miles an hour. He's getting people out, and you just don't see that anymore. And it just, you know, I think that, you know, it says a lot about him. And he hangs in there, you know. And if this is his last year with the Indians, I really think he's going to go pitch somewhere else. And at least have a shot to make some other people's roster.
He sort of reminds me in a lot of ways, maybe not every way, but in a lot of ways, he sort of reminds me of Charlie Nagy, as that kind of personality and that person and that leader, sort of that quiet leader, in the clubhouse. But, also, Charlie wasn't a guy who could overpower you with stuff. He relied on being sort of keeping you off balance and hitting the spots too.
Yeah, Charlie was a number one pick too. I mean, he had more talent than Tom, and Tomlin, you know, and Charlie, you know, yeah, I think that's a good example. He was a younger guy in those veteran staffs with Hershiser and Martinez, and I think Dave Burba and you know, a lot of those guys. And he was the guy in waiting. He eventually pitched himself into, you know, the number one status. But and then, you know, at the end of his career, I mean, his elbow was shot and he kept pitching. And
right.
He just, there was no cartilage left. And I remember Charlie saying, the doctor looked at it and he said, there's no cartilage in my elbow. And he said, go get him, kid. He said, basically saying, as long as you can pitch, keep pitching. But I'm not sure exactly how you're doing it.
Well, another reason why I sort of try to draw that comparison is, you know, now Charlie Nagy is a pitching coach out in Los Angeles. So, you know, maybe at the time, and I'm not saying it's anytime soon, but at the time Josh Tomlin wants to hang it up, I'm sure there's a job in some organization, you know, for a guy of his sort of personality and you know, leadership qualities. I can definitely see him catching on with an organization, be it the Indians or somebody else, as an assistant or, you know, something like that.
Oh yeah, I think definitely. I think he's got a lot to offer as a coach. I think the Indians would love to have him in the organization. And I think if Josh, you know, thinks, you know, he's gotten the most out of his career as a pitcher is over, I think he would love to work for the Indians. I think this is a guy, you know, you think of him and you think of the Cleveland Indians in the same thought, I think.
Right. Well, and you know, whether or not Josh Tomlin makes the postseason roster is a question that will be decided in the next week or so. What are your thoughts on the postseason roster this year? There's a couple of questions. I think there's a couple of sort of I want to say position battles, but you look at a Rajah Davis and a Greg Allen, and you wonder, you know, where these decisions are going to come down to, and that could be one. Any others that jump out at you?
Yeah, that's a good one, Joe, because, I mean, they both kind of do the same thing. You know, Allen's obviously a pinch hitter, probably at this stage of his career, a better defensive player. I'm thinking about, you know, last year they went with 11 pitchers, and you've got four lefties that have pitched really well, you know. You know, Tyler Olson, you know, of course, Miller's going to make it. You've got Oliver Perez is going to make it. And I'm trying to think.
Brad Hand.
Yeah, Brad Hand. And those, so at least three of those guys are going to make it. And Tyler Olson hasn't done anything, you know, since being recalled not to make it.
He's been fantastic since they recalled him.
So would you go with four lefties? And I haven't really studied the splits, how they do against righties, but I think you're going to have to, you know, that's a tough call right there. That really is. And but you still need, where does that leave Neil Ramirez and maybe a Tomlin? Do you keep him on the bullpen? Dan Otero's pitched better of late, you know, so you're going to need some right-handers too. So, you know, that's going to be an interesting situation on how they handle that.
Well, in a small sample size, in the last, you know, 2 weeks, we've seen John Edwards come out of the bullpen and do nothing but strike everybody out.
Exactly. That's another guy who, you know, does he come out of nowhere and make the rotation? This guy's thrown, what, 96, 95 miles an hour? I mean, I watched him Sunday night on ESPN. I watched that game on TV, and the Red Sox couldn't catch up to him. He was just throwing it by people. It was interesting.
Right, and it would not surprise me if they kept him, but you know, and told Olson or told Tyler Olson, hey, you know, things might be different in the if we make it to the ALCS, you know, stick around, something like that.
Yeah, and these guys, you know, that's exactly right, Joe, because you know they're going to have matchups in mind. You know, they're going to have when you get into the postseason, you might make a team because you've got good numbers against. You know, one or two guys, specific guys in that line, in the opposing lineup. Mm-hmm. So, I think that's a good point. And, and you're also going to have, you're going to have at least one or two starters in that bullpen too. You know, like we've talked about, Clevinger and Bauer, they're both right-handed. So, who knows? It's going to be an interesting mix, especially in the rotation.
We didn't even mention Bieber being in the
right.
mix for
Yeah, exactly. Know. That's another guy.
You see a lot of times with these playoff games where the starter can only go 2, 3, 4 innings, and you've got to bring in a guy for 2 innings or more in the middle there, and Bieber would be a guy coming out of the bullpen that I think would be a real weapon for Francona because he throws strikes and he, you know, for the most part, you know.
He doesn't walk anybody.
In a ball game. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that's a part of the plan too. So, you know, they really are, I was reading a story the other day that, some teams are going to use the opener concept in the postseason, maybe a team like Oakland, for instance. Mm-hmm. The Indians are kind of, the opener fad is here, but the Indians are like old school in the fact they could have 4 starters that could go into the 6th inning or 7th inning. They're more traditional that way. And I'm wondering, and I would think if I'm a manager or if I'm a GM, I like it this way. I run into problems when I'm trying to piece together, a postseason game with an opener that's going to give me an inning or an inning and a third, and then we got to go to the starter that might give me 4 innings. And, so I think, that kind of puts the Indians – I think that gives the Indians an advantage no matter who they're playing. And, of course, Houston's not going to use an opener either because they've got the best rotation in the American League.
All right, let's jump in and take some questions from submitted to Paul online. Paul, what do you got for us?
This is from Andy Meese from Sandusky. Should Ron Scahill, from the White Sox reliever who hit Eric Gonzalez on Wednesday night, hit him in the head, and also hit Brandon Guyer to start the 8th inning. Should he have been ejected from that game? And, I think that this was a bullpen game by the White Sox. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were using, I think he was the 7th or 8th pitcher out of the gate. And I think – I don't think – there was no intention there. This
right.
is they're losing 10-2.
Yeah,
I just think it was a bad pitch, and thank goodness it looks like Gonzalez is okay. He's in the concussion protocol. I'd be surprised if he plays these last 3 games. Maybe he plays on Sunday, if you could see Scahill's reaction, he was really upset. He kind of squatted down on the front of the mound, put his glove. His face in his glove. This was not intentional.
Right. I don't think there was a message trying to be sent there by the White Sox, in a 10-0 at the time, 10-0 game. I don't think the message that was being sent was, hey, we got a double-A pitcher out here and we don't know where the ball's going when it leaves his
exactly.
hand.
Exactly. Yeah, so. I think that's right. And I think if the umpires had seen any indication of that, he would have been gone. And usually there is something before, something like nobody ever wants to hit anybody in the head. No. Even if you're sending a message, that's the last thing you want to do.
But at the same time, the Indians will remember that happened. They play him 19 times next season, and that's sort of a hey, if you're going to run this guy out here who throws 98 and doesn't know where it's going, then, you know, you got to watch out too. So I and again, we've seen instances this season where, you know, particularly with the fella down in Atlanta who got suspended for throwing a guy, you know, that sort of culture is trying to sort of get rid of that in baseball, but it's always going to be there.
That's right. The players police themselves, you know. So, and then, you know, in the ninth inning of that game, you know, Oliver Perez did come in and hit the leadoff guy from the White Sox, but he hit him in the foot with some
with
slider.
A curveball. Yeah.
So I mean, come on.
What did Frankie say earlier this year? Yeah. You're going to hit me with a curveball, please. Hit me with a curveball. Yeah,
right, exactly.
Well, and then you got CeCe yesterday, costing himself $500,000.
Yeah, how about that?
Going after a Rays hitter. And that was legit. I mean, that was, you hit my guy, I'm going to hit you. And he did that on purpose.
Yeah. I mean, think CeCe can do without that $500,000. He's made a lot of money in his career. But still.
Yeah. I mean, you walk back to the dugout after that. After you got ejected for that, knowing it cost you $500,000, your teammate's going to be, you know, hooking you up. Yeah, you're the man when you do that. That's pretty good.
Okay. I got another one here, Joe. Should Terry Francona rest Lindor and Ramirez? This is from Alan Perko. And I think, I don't know, there's three games left. So I think they have got a couple days off. But, I mean, if you're not – I don't think it's going to matter. If you can take the next three games off, and I'm sure – I don't know if that's going to help you. And you've got 4 days off here coming up, you know, with between the end of the regular season and the start of the ALDS. I think the one of the reasons I've wondered not so much about Lindor, but Ramirez. And I think the reason they keep playing Ramirez, I mean, he has had a couple days off and he's been taken out of some games early, but I think they're trying to get him going.
He's got to hit his way out of this. Exactly. Right. I don't think he can have too many at bats before the end of the regular season here. You got to get him all the opportunities you can.
Exactly. You know, I think, you know, and he doesn't want to come out of the games. You know, he wants to keep playing. He knows that as well as anybody, that the only way you're going to get out of this thing is to keep swinging. And, you know, unfortunately, it just hasn't worked for him right now. He's in a tough spot. And, you know, that's, you know, like we said before, that's a concern, definite concern. One more from Jim Regan. He wants the Indians to keep Greg Allen in center field as opposed to Kipnis in the postseason. He wants Allen on the postseason roster and not Kipnis. Now, you know, I don't know, Joe. How do you feel about that?
I don't see them leaving Kipnis off the roster completely. I think Kipnis is going to get a chance to start as pretty much all of the postseason games. And you bring Allen in as a defensive replacement late in the game after three at bats or so for Kipnis, three or four at bats for Kipnis, you bring Allen into the game. I don't think that changes from the way that Francona has operated for the last 3 weeks or so.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Kipnis, you know, has hit his way back into where he deserves to start in the lineup. I'm not crazy about him playing center field. You know, I think Allen is a better option, obviously. We saw that last night against Kansas City where he made a couple plays that, you know, I love Kipnis, you know. Kipnis isn't making those plays. He's a second baseman. So right. I think we've got to take that into consideration. But I think it's, you know, this is what they have. This is the team they have. There's no perfect teams out there. And I think if Kipnis hits – that's what they're counting on. If he keeps swinging the bat like he has, you know, he's going to help them. And then, like you said, you get into a tight game in the seventh, eighth, or ninth, or extra innings, you put Allen in there, and Allen can help too. I mean, the guy's got 21 stolen bases already. So, you know, I think this isn't a great situation. It's the best situation that the Indians have available to them.
And he walked off the Astros back on May 27th, so – you know, it's not like he can't hit in the clutch too, but But you're right. If Kipnis is in there and Kipnis is hitting, he makes the bottom of the Indians lineup more dangerous, and he can turn the lineup over to Lindor and Brantley and Ramirez. And I think you know, you're going to need to see that in some of these games here coming up next week.
Definitely. I think, you know, this is the kind of strategy that they're kind of wed to now. I don't think they're going to change.
All right. Well, we're sort of heading into this middle week here. Obviously the last three games in Kansas City, you know, this weekend, but then after that, the Indians timeline is sort of coming into focus now. After Kansas City on Sunday, what's the plan for Terry Francona?
Okay, they're going to have a optional workout on Monday at Progressive Field. That's not going to be open to the media. Tuesday, they're going to have the scrimmage or simulated game, and that the locker room will be open. Reporters will come in. I still don't have all the details of that game. Whether they're going to have fans, you know, whether fans can attend. You know, I know Terry Francona was kicking that idea around. I think there's some, there's a lot of things that have to happen to do that. You got to hire, you have to hire security. You've got to, I don't know if they open the concessions. Mm-hmm. You've got to have, people to open the gates to, so I'm not sure exactly where that is yet, but they're going to have some kind of game.
Yeah, a couple more thoughts on that. I believe there's a Justin Timberlake concert that night as well. I'm not 100% sure. I believe so, at the Q. So that might complicate things in terms of having a competing event next door, even if it's free or for charity or something like that. I can't imagine, many of the players might want to go over and see Justin Timberlake. They might want to have a simulated game scheduled for earlier in the day than maybe later.
Yeah,
in the evening.
I think it would be around 2 or 3, yeah. Joe. They play that game.
Hey,
maybe Justin Timberlake could sing the national anthem. Tito wants to make it as close to a game setting as possible.
There you go. My thought on it is maybe have it early enough in the day where you can bus a couple of busloads of kids from Cleveland City Schools in to sit in the stands and
watch. Well, that's a good idea.
I mean, they bring their own chaperones.
Yeah, and last year, they had all the employees of Indians employees, kind of about 1,000 people in the stands when they tried to do this again. And so then,
you're skipping the best part. Last year, they did the simulated game. They had Cherney and Antonetti were dressed
right
up and in the field shagging fly balls.
And Francona said, "I think we're going to get some real athletes this year." So he took a shot at those guys. And then I think Wednesday, Joe, they'll have another workout. Then they get on a plane and, head to Houston. And they'll work out Thursday at Minute Maid Park. And then Friday it starts as game one.
Well, that's it right there. I laid out pretty much the schedule for the American League Central Division champions. Going on the road for the opening round of the playoffs for the first time in 3 years to start. The last 2 years they've opened the ALDS at home. This time they got to win one in Houston in order to force a game four here back in Cleveland.
Yeah, definitely. They're only guaranteed one game here at Progressive Field, game three. So it's the best of five. It's better than the wild card, but not a whole lot better. You better be at the top of your game because you could be gone in a minute here. Not too many teams do what the Yankees did last year against the Indians when you're down 0-2 and come back and win those last three games. That's a hard thing to do. But certainly the Indians have the talent. They up and down the lineup. This is a good team. And it's probably a better team, I think, from a health standpoint. From Miller has come, it looks like Miller is back in form. He pitched very well last night.
Mm-hmm.
Donaldson has got three hits. He looks like he's starting to get out of that spring training mode and starting to swing a little better. Kluber is back. You know, Carrasco's, you know, from the elbow thing is all the way back. I think, you know, the planning that these guys have made, you know, it seems to be have everything has been geared to this point of the season, to the postseason. And I think, you know, where last year, you know, Brantley was and Chisenhall were, you know, were kind of, you know, really weren't ready to play, but they were on the postseason roster. Then Encarnacion gets hurt, and, you know, Brantley gets overexposed. I think they're in a little better spot than they were last year, but they are facing a great team. It's you know, there's no getting around that Houston is definitely a very, very good team.
Well, to be the man, you got to beat the man. Isn't that the case?
That's right.
Chernoff says, Mike Chernoff, the general manager, says they're trending in the right direction at the right time, which you know, sounds great. I think, like you said, last year there were a lot of – Tito said, last year at this time they were clicking on all cylinders, and then the season ended and there were all these questions and there was all this upheaval and turmoil. Now all the upheaval and turmoil sort of happened in the last 2 to 3 months, and if they can finish out these last three games in Kansas City and just get that little spark, I think, you know, the worst part about next week is that they're not going to be playing games Monday through Friday.
Yeah, and that scares Francona. I think that scares most managers. You know, and I think that gives the wild card team. That's why sometimes you see these wild card teams. They have an edge. You know, like the Yankees did last year. They beat the Twins and they come right in and you know, survive a five gamer against the Indians and then take Houston to seven games. You know, you don't stop playing. You keep the rhythm. You keep it. You know, you keep your timing going. And so that's this little, you know, what, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, that four-day gap is, you know, something that teams, you know, really work hard to kind of, you know, overcome.
All right, that brings us to the final three games of the season. Hoynesy, good luck out there in Kansas City. Get home here to Cleveland for next week, and we will see you at the ballpark at Progressive Field for another podcast next week while the Indians prepare for the American League Division Series.
It should be fun, Joe. I think it's, you know, I don't know. I go back and forth. You know, I was listening. I've been listening to some people think the Indians, you know, are the team to beat in the AL in the American League. And then maybe I think sometimes we're so close to this team that you look at what they can't do instead of what they can do. And I think that kind of influences your thinking at times. So it's good to get an outside perspective, but outside perspective or inside perspective, it won't matter on October 5th. That's when it starts for real. And that's five games to advance and, you know, to keep playing. And there's nothing more real than that.
Looking forward to it, Paul. We'll talk to you then.
All righty, Joe.